This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us Monday here on SB Nation AM. All right, so tonight, Virginia, Texas Tech. And the Cavaliers get there by a call that was made at the end of their game at Auburn that sent Kyle Guy to the free throw line for three. And I've been making this point this morning. It's a foul. You just may not like that the whistle was blown. But don't tell me that was not a foul and that that's not the kind of call that needs to be made. You want to argue that the Jerome double dribble was should have been called? I can make that case and I'd make that case with you. But don't tell me that was not a foul. That was a foul. But the issue is, we as fans have not came to grips with what we want officials to do in the closing seconds of close games. And it doesn't matter what sport it is. It doesn't matter if it's baseball. It doesn't matter if it's hockey. It doesn't matter if it's football. It doesn't matter, whatever it is. The umpires, officials, referees, whatever it is, when we are in close games, we don't know exactly what we want from them. Right? With umpires in baseball, for example, we don't want them shrinking or expanding the strike zone. We want the strike zone to be the strike zone, right? We want them to make calls the best they possibly can. In football, we want to know, did we let them play? Or did we not let them play? In basketball, you don't let a game get decided by a call like that. Why not if there's a foul that's being made? There's a number of things that we as fans have not been able to agree on in terms of officiating. And this is the biggest one. Look how many people on Twitter went to the you got to let the kids play card or you shouldn't let officials be the story card. But my argument to that has always been the line. Where's the line? Where do you draw it and who creates it? Right? Because if Kyle Guy was tackled by Samir Doty, then you call a foul. But then where is the line to the point where contact, going up for a shot, becomes a foul that needs to be called? Guys, we haven't been able to figure this out because it still creeps into our vocabulary every time we have a game that's decided by officials, whether it's a late pass interference call, whether it's free throws at the line to win a game, whether it is a penalty in the Stanley Cup playoffs, whatever it is, we still haven't determined what we want our officials to do late in games, and that trend is probably going to continue.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
In about 30 minutes, Jerry Palm is going to join us. We'll talk about the NCAA championship game tonight and the Final Four games from over the weekend. Have you written a book? Learn how to get it published and potentially sold online and at bookstores. Call Page Publishing now for your free book publishing kit. 800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. Page Publishing. So, as I said at the top of the hour, I just don't think we as a sporting fan base have come to, well, we don't come to agreements on very many things anyway. But we haven't really come to agreement with what we want officials to do late in close games. I was talking about this earlier this morning. If Kyle Guy was going for a three just to make the game close, just to finish, you know, no, we instead of losing by nine, let's lose by six. And Doty went over to try to contest the shot for whatever reason. He wouldn't have, but let's say he did. There wouldn't have been a whistle because at that moment the officials would have been aware of the circumstance. There's no need to send the kid to the line for three when they're down six with 0.6 seconds left. But officials are aware of the circumstance. They know what the circumstance is. All right. This kid has got free in the court. He's going to shoot a three, and that three could win the game. It's going to get contested. And if there's contact in the cylinder, then I'm going to call it. Now, the problem is it comes from the counter argument, which is these jump shooters are very good at kicking out, moving themselves within the contact, And officials aren't always aware of that. And that's true. And that is true. But what do we want? Do we want swallowed whistles late in games, or do we want the game to be officiated the way it's supposed to be officiated all throughout? And I think, Ron, you made a point about we had a game where we didn't see officiating in the NFC Championship game.
And we were up in arms over it.
Right? We lost our minds. Where was the whistle?
There was a lawsuit
over it. So I've always contended, I think people just want what's best for them. I don't think they want anything. Like if we universally said we want this from officials in close games, it still wouldn't matter, because what we want most of all is something that benefits us.
And, you know, one thing that we haven't really talked about is the officiating. For that ref to have the presence of mind of what's at stake in that game. To really realize, you know, he's going up for three, this guy could win the game. Because a lot of times, I don't know how much of the game they're following. Like, oh,
That's true. This
could be it. I mean, maybe he wasn't thinking that far. He's just like, I'm just going to call a foul. But like you said, I mean, if this was Texas Tech versus Michigan State yesterday, and for the final shot, Michigan State throws up a basket and the guy gets fouled. I think you're right. I mean, there was a 10 point difference at that time. I don't think he sends him to the free throw line. I think he's just like, all right, zeros, game over.
Yeah, game over. So,
because what's the point in sending him for three free throws when that's still not going to get you even close?
Yeah, and I get it. It stings. But if you're an Auburn fan, flip the script and tell me that you'd be okay with no whistle being blown.
Right.
Flip the script and put Bryce Brown in the corner, trying to make a game-winning three.
Which is all that Ram fan was asking against the Saints.
That's exactly right.
Or Saints fan was asking against the Rams. Like, Saints fan just saying, Rams, what if we did that to you and cost you a trip to the Super Bowl?
And listen, nobody likes it. It's a cliche, right? We don't want officiating, you know, to be the story, right? If we know the officials, they didn't do their job. But the reality of it is, I think the job was done here. I think the right job was done here. Right. There was a foul. You can go to the videotape and you can analyze it frame by frame and whether or not there was a little bit of a kick out or whatever. But there was contact made. There was clearly contact made within the cylinder of the shot. And that is a foul. The argument is not that. The argument is, when do you call that? If you're not going to call it there, where are you going to call it? Because in reality, the official has to be fair to both sides. And the fair play on that is to say he was fouled. To not blow the whistle is to be fair to Auburn and not fair to Virginia. Again, this was a game where that shot could have decided the game. It would have decided the game. And so for official to then say, no, I swallow the whistle here, is it's an absolute slap in the face to what Virginia was trying to do in that game. We was trying to win, and guy got free enough to get a good shot off, and he should have been protected by the officials if there was contact, and there was contact. You just don't like games like that that end like that, and we don't, and I get it. But at the same time, I don't want officials swallowing their whistle, because I don't know what that actually means when you tell me that. When fans tell me that, what does it mean? Right. Oh well. Unless he blows the guy up, is that the only time an official is supposed to blow his whistle? Like, what if he just went over and just pushed him? Right. Well, gotta let him play. No, we'd all agree that there should be a foul called. Now, just take that and slice it degrees less and less and less. Then you reach a point where we might fight over it.
Listen, if the ref had not called that foul, we would still be talking about the narrative then would be, why didn't he call it? He should
have
called it.
Sure.
You know,
like the narrative that we have about the double dribble.
Yes.
Which was a weird double dribble, right? Like, I understand it, but listen, I think he should have called double dribble, but it was a weird double dribble because we don't usually see that.
No, and the fact that the ball really didn't move.
Right. It was a weird, it's just a weird.
Like it hit his foot perfectly in real time, it hit his foot and it still looked like a dribble.
Yeah, it completely did, right?
So I totally any other it. Time, honestly, any other time that happens and he's dribbling the ball off his foot, the ball is in the backcourt.
Yeah,
and then, you would clearly see it's like, oh, that was a kicked ball.
If you Google, if you YouTube, I should say, Chris Webber's timeout. If you Google that, but in that play, Webber has the ball and he walks. Right, he walks right as soon as the inbound comes in. He walks, and Billy Packer, who's on the call, is like, he walked. They didn't call it. This was a little more it was a little weirder. That was blatant. Like, oh God, they totally missed that one. That he took like three steps. This one is a little. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess technically it is a double dribble, but it's a weird look. So nevertheless, it's officiating's officiating. It's hard for us to kind of wrap what that means. All right. This day, April 8th, 1974, this happened in Atlanta.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
What a great call that was.
Seriously.
Vin Scully, who is the Dodgers announcer, and that's who Hank Aaron was playing when he broke Babe Ruth's record. There are moments in broadcasting that you know you're going to come up against, or you potentially are going to come up against, okay? Anytime you, like, look, the Baltimore Orioles announcers, for example, knew that unless Cal Ripken got hurt or was, that there was going to be a moment where they were going to have to do something to call Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak, right? Yep. You just know it on the calendar. Eventually, you're going to run into it. And I'm sure Vin Scully thought there could be a moment where Hank Aaron is going to hit a home run when we're playing them.
You play the numbers, right?
You figure it out. Maybe we do. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. But there's potential that that's going to happen while I'm there. So you have something kind of prepared. You have a thought process prepared. What was impressive to me is the delivery of that. Like, you could botch that. You could botch that moment. You could stumble a bit. You could mess it up. You could mess up what you're trying to say. He does not do any of that. It is perfectly stated and perfectly said at the perfect time. And the reason we did listen, we know it's radio and there's a long pause there, but I did that on purpose because Vin Scully was a master of that.
Yes.
Of letting the moment speak for itself.
And it's radio, so you can, but he did that.
And he called that on the radio.
Yeah.
He let that moment be on the radio with no vocals, no words,
but
just crowd.
The beauty of it is that you can picture it.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you're a part of it. Yeah, you could see the fireworks. You could see the crowd cheering. I mean, you know, we're at the stadium at that moment.
Yeah. He walks out and just lets that be the star. Not him. Not all of the things he could have said. Not a big, huge speech that he could have said. He lets that moment set on its own. Then he comes in and he gives you the thought process of what has just occurred. Right? The breaking of Babe Ruth's record.
I don't know if he was thinking about it then, but now when we look back, it's like, you know, there were still a lot of, I mean, this is 1974. There's still a lot of racial tensions.
Yeah, exactly.
Even today, there's still some racial tensions going on. So, I mean, it's kind of poignant.
Yep. And just says a black man in the deep South getting a standing ovation, you know, and what a great moment for all of us. That's a great Vin Scully line.
Yep.
It's a great Vin Scully moment, but it's Hank Aaron's moment as he broke Babe Ruth's record on this date 45 years ago.
That's fake news.
Yeah.
It's not 45 years
ago. 45 years ago.
No, Tony. That was like, you know, seven. The mid-70s were only like 20, 30 years ago.
I also want to point out, it is a shame because of steroids, because of what happened, that Barry Bonds couldn't have that similar moment.
Right.
He didn't even come close to having the similar moment. It was, that's just the way we, this, by that time when he did it, we had enough of the steroid stuff. We had enough of the game being tainted and stained and all that. We just couldn't give him that kind of moment.
Yeah, because you could argue that Mark McGwire had that moment.
Yeah, Mark McGwire did have that moment. He did. He did have that moment. You could still hear Jack Buck make a call. You said Joe Buck, I think, made a call too. I think Joe Buck was doing Cardinals games back then as well. But not that kind of moment where everybody in the country was like, stop, it broke on the news, et cetera.
For Barry, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have it for Barry. We didn't feel it for Barry at all. All right, 800-777-2907. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, it's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us for SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. Nevertheless, outside of the officiating, it was a very good game. Robert points this out on Twitter, and I thank you for the tweet. Bruce Pearl didn't want that to be the focus. It was a good game. Don't let it define the game, Bruce Pearl said. I absolutely agree. It was a very watchable game. I will make a confession, Ron. I wasn't as into Texas Tech Michigan as I was Auburn Virginia. By the second game, I kind of went in and out. I was watching it, and then I would leave, and I'd go in the kitchen, and I'd come back. I'd watch a little bit of it. And I'd get busy on my phone, and I'd look up and watch it. But somehow, Auburn and Virginia captivated me more. And this is not to take anything away from the game, Texas Tech and Michigan State. Michigan State, you know, even though they lost by 10, it was still, you know, good game throughout. But it wasn't as – didn't captivate me as much. I mean, Auburn's run at the end of the game was – I thought – was great, and how the game ended kind of stunk, but the pressure of making those free throws to me was mind-boggling. I mean, I just can't imagine being on that free throw line knowing what was at stake.
See, I don't think you need to apologize for not being as involved for Tech against Michigan State.
Yeah.
The reason being, and I think there's a lot of people who will agree to this, that Virginia-Auburn game was so intense that you almost didn't have anything really left in the tank.
That might be the case. That's a kind of a good way to put that. That might be the case.
Because, I mean, the final, I know we're all harping, you know, we're only talking about one singular play, but that final, what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
Yeah, it was wild.
It was wild.
It was wild. Absolutely wild. Great. It was a great game. And, Auburn didn't do what I thought they were going to do. I got to get the official numbers, but they didn't break Virginia defensively by just knocking down threes all night.
Right.
Like, I thought that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. But Bryce Brown and Jared Harper, their two guys, their two stars, were really handcuffed on the night. Yeah, I mean, the final numbers were Auburn was 9-for-31 from the three-point line.
Whew. That's a good percentage. If you're a batter.
God. So, I mean, that took 31 threes to try to break Virginia's defense. But Jared Harper and Bryce Brown were really handcuffed a bit in that game. And Doty, he was the one that kind of came through at the end. They point out that he's the kid that makes the foul. But the reality is they're not really in the position that they're in at the end of the game without his contributions off the bench. He's the one that helped get them in that position to begin with, because Brown got hot late, but he struggled. Harper got hot a little bit, but he struggled. So that Virginia defense, I mean, that's the real deal. Tonight should be really interesting to see which of these offenses can go against these two fantastic defenses, some of the tops in the country. I mean, I think Texas Tech is the best in the tournament so far, and Virginia's had the best scoring defense in the nation this season. So this is going to be a drag them out type of game.
My money's on, my cousin JC.
Yeah, that's right. Texas Tech win. I mean, Chris Beard. When we talked to our guy, I'll be sure.
Yep.
Is that what? Yeah, guy from what was the name of the SB Nation site for
that again? The Matadors? Something about the Matadors?
Viva the Matadors.
That's right. The SB Nation site for Texas Tech's Viva the Matadors. And we were talking about Chris Beard, right? He took the job at UNLV, had the job at UNLV for like 10 seconds, and then left to go become the coach at Texas Tech when Tubby Smith left.
It was a Greg Schiano moment.
That's right. Yeah, he literally was like, I'm happy to be here at UNLV. I'm so excited to be part of the Running Rebel family here in the great city of Las Vegas. We're going to be bringing exciting basketball back to the Thomas. Beep, beep, beep. Hold on 1 second. I got to go. I got to run. See ya. And goes off to Lubbock because he had been an assistant coach with Bobby Knight. And liked Lubbock. They said it was his dream job, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how many people ever said, I can't wait to live in Lubbock. It's been my lifelong dream to live in Lubbock.
I've never heard that.
You know, it could be a fantastic town. I've never been.
I have heard it's a pretty good town. I don't know if it's Vegas good, like, you know, living in Vegas. But, I mean, I've heard it's a pretty good town.
So maybe that was part of the appeal, too. It's like, you know what, I could probably get in trouble in Vegas.
Yeah,
and
right.
By moving here, I might not get in that much trouble.
He's got Texas Tech in the championship game. That's wild. I mean, that is great. Good for him.
No, it's been kind of fun around here, you know, seeing because we have some people who actually did go to Tech.
Okay, so give me the idea around the office. There's a Texas Tech contingency.
We have a host who hosts on the weekend, Cody Stutes.
Oh, he went to Texas Tech?
He went to Texas Tech.
Good for him.
And, you know, since I came in yesterday, worked a little bit yesterday, did get the chance to run into him right before his show. And he it's almost like he's glassy-eyed.
Oh, sure. I bet
like
he is.
I was talking to him. I'm like, man, how excited are you? And he's like, oh, yeah. No, I'm really excited. And it's just, I don't think the moment has sunk into him yet. That his school is actually playing for a national championship. Because, I mean, he did
mention, it is a bizarre feeling.
He did say to me, he's like, you know, Texas Tech doesn't play for national championships. They don't play for national titles.
That's a good point.
You know, and I mean, you know, obviously he's referring to the only two sports Texas Tech plays, football and basketball.
Yeah, right.
They obviously, I guess they don't have other sports. But those are the two that count.
Yeah, it's the same thing with South Carolina when they went 2 years ago. It's like, what are we doing here? Like,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is incredible. Like, I can't believe we're at the Final Four.
You know, you sat there and you were thinking to yourself, South Carolina doesn't play for titles.
Yeah. I never wanted to win a game so badly in my life than that East Regional Finals when they played Florida at Madison Square Garden. Like, I wanted to go to the Final Four so bad. I went to the game. I was living in New Jersey, and I got to the train station, and I'm on the train, and I'm wearing all my Gamecock stuff, and I'm on the train, and I'm driving, and I'm going in, and I'm thinking to myself, my wife is just like this. The morning I left, she's like, go Gators, you know, just giving me a hard time. And I thought, man, we can't lose this game. I can't lose this game. Not like I lost so many times to the Gators in football. Can I just have this one little moment. And throughout the game, it's one of those feelings, like, I don't know if you have ever had this, where maybe people aren't as pessimistic as I am sometimes, but I always have this feeling that the other shoe is going to drop, right? South Carolina is up by 7 with 2 minutes to go and they fall apart or whatever it was. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and South Carolina just kept hitting shot after shot after shot. And they fought when they won the game. And there's that feeling of, I don't believe this. We're going to the Final Four. That's got to be like what Texas Tech is going through. They're in the championship game. They could win the national championship. Listen, I'll make this very clear. Tennessee, and where I live in Nashville, there's a lot of Tennessee fans who really believed in what Rick Barnes had. And I'll get to him a little bit later. But there was still a feeling of, yeah, but I don't know. It doesn't fit right. It doesn't feel right. We're going to win a national championship in basketball? I'm not ready yet. I don't know what that means, right? There was this feeling of this isn't real, right? I wonder if Texas Tech felt that way. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for the fan base. I don't know what it feels. But it's a great story that Chris Beard and the Red Raiders are in the championship game. Very good story.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, let me tell you about Blue Emu. No chill, no burn, no odor. Number one selling emu oil brand in America. I use it. It's been fantastic. Made in America. Unlike competitors, they don't use capsaicin, which is chili peppers. They also don't use menthol, which is the ingredient that makes the cold sensation. Blue Emu, it works. You won't stink. It's available all over the place. Get it at major retailers. It's also, as I said earlier, the number one selling emu oil brand in America. This is made right here in America, Blue Emu. All right, so Rick Barnes, I was talking about Tennessee, and some of my friends who are big Tennessee fans, they loved this past season with the Volunteers, but a couple of them talked to me. We were talking about this team. You know, the whole national, you heard me say it a number of times, are they national championship good? And a lot of them were really kind of grasping with the idea that, man, Tennessee had a year where they could have won the national championship, and it just didn't fit. You know, it's very similar when you see a school that just is a football school. They concentrate on football. Auburn is a perfect example of that. And they get on this national basketball stage. Does it last? Or do they catch lightning in a bottle, and then they disappear for a while? Well, I think they're building something great at Tennessee. I've been saying that I think the SEC is on the verge of something pretty fantastic that is going to make them one of the premier conferences in college basketball. You know, they're like, you don't have to go back in the history books where SEC basketball outside of the few top teams wasn't all that good. It was really bad. But I think it's going to be deeper. I think it's going to be better. I think it's going to get close to what the ACC is. I think they're bringing in better coaches. Jerry Stackhouse, I hope he works out at Vanderbilt, but that was a coup. I mean, Jerry Stackhouse, the basketball player / assistant coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, is now the head coach at Vanderbilt. The conference already has Ben Howland, who's formerly of UCLA, Rick Barnes, formerly of Clemson and Texas. I'll get to him in a second. but, you know, John Calipari is going to stay at Kentucky for a long period of time. Bruce Pearl, right, building something at Auburn, continuing to build something at Auburn. Nate Oates coming in to be the head coach at Alabama. Kermit Davis from MTSU is at Ole Miss. It's a lot of really good coaches. Barnes, though, is in the news because UCLA wants him. UCLA, that is, was trying to get Jamie Dixon out of his deal at TCU. UCLA that almost tried to get Eric Musselman, who, by the way, got a job at Arkansas in the SEC. But Barnes is being courted by UCLA, and Barnes said he would be interested and he would go if that was offered to him. That's disappointing to me. Now, UCLA is a premier job, don't get me wrong, but he's building something pretty good at Tennessee, and they can pay him at Tennessee. If he wants money, if it's about money, they can pay him. If it's about making him one of the highest paid coaches in the conference, they can do that. If it means matching the offer UCLA gives him, they can do that. They can do that. I think he's building something really great in Knoxville. I think it's going to be one of those. I don't know about Auburn. I think Bruce Pearl's a great recruiter, but I don't know if Auburn, you know, is a consistent thing. I think Tennessee is a consistent thing. I think Barnes continues to bring in great recruit after great recruit after great recruit. I think he builds something. UCLA, this may have been the answer to the question, is UCLA still a premier job? And to some, including some of the important people in college basketball, it is. Right? If he leaves Tennessee for UCLA, it shows that the draw power that UCLA still has, that it's still always had it. Just maybe down a little bit, but it's still always had it. Because it's got to be more than money. It's not because UCLA is going to pay him more. Tennessee can pay him more, right? It's not going to be about because, he's a West Coast guy. All right, he coached at Clemson, Texas, Tennessee. He's been in the same region for a very long time. No, this will be entirely about the pull that UCLA still brings in the pantheon of college basketball. It still has that power, right? I mean, he just came off a year where Tennessee, and I know they're losing a number of guys, and Grant Williams may not be coming back, but he is leaving a program that he had at number one in the nation for a good chunk of the season, got a 2 seed in the tournament, and again, very bright future. But UCLA could still be that draw. Now, is he parlaying this into a John Calipari-like deal with Tennessee?
That'd be so awesome.
I think that could be the deal. That could be the situation. Will you let it be known that you really like UCLA and hopes that Tennessee comes back and goes, well, here's what we did last time we had a coach leave for Los Angeles. We left, we almost named a sewage plant after him. You may have heard about it, the Lane Kiffin Waste Treatment Plant. We don't take kindly to people in Tennessee who want to leave for Los Angeles. So, Rick Barnes, be careful. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Lane Kiffin needed a police escort out of Knoxville, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember the exact details, but I do.
Maybe it was that, or he left in the middle of the night.
I think he did.
You know, it was just...
I'll tell you.
Witness protection program came in.
I've never seen a school, and maybe UNLV when they had Chris Beard for 8 seconds. I never saw a guy kick a school in the face like Lane Kiffin kicked Tennessee when he left for USC. And I said at the time, I don't blame him. If that's your dream job, you go get it. You go get it. You take it. And maybe Barnes is that's his dream job. Maybe Pauley Pavilion is great. Are you kidding me? That's a great place to coach college basketball. Now, UCLA, isn't that Malibu? Isn't that where, is it located in Malibu? Is it close to Malibu? Nearby Malibu?
Yeah, it's actually.
All right. Knoxville's a great town, but it ain't Malibu.
Where it's situated, it's east of the 405.
Okay.
West of the 405, right there on Sunset Boulevard. West of the 405, you go into Pacific Palisades, and then that goes into Malibu.
Okay, so if I'm a Hollywood star, am I going to UCLA basketball games or USC basketball games?
Like
in the vicinity of Los Angeles.
It depends on where you grew up.
If I'm like...
You're not, but the thing is, you're probably not, only alumni will probably go to, if you were an alumnus
so
of
that's
UCLA.
Not a star place. Like if I go to UCLA game,
you
I may
know,
not
here's
go,
the thing.
It's Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, stars of 51st Dates.
What would probably happen is if they got hot, and I'm talking, you know, 1995 national championship hot again.
Right.
I think the stars would come out.
Okay. But they don't normally come out?
No, not for that. But, gotcha. I mean, you're dealing with an iconic place. And let's face it, I mean, the weather's fantastic.
Weather's great. Weather's fantastic.
And literally where UCLA is situated is in between Pacific Palisades, just east of the 405 freeway, and Beverly Hills.
And
it's kind of intertwined in Beverly Hills, like the outskirts of Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
You can go across the street from, like, one of the entrances to UCLA. You can cross that. You can cross Sunset Boulevard. And you're going through one of the open gates of Bel Air.
Oh, wow. Boy, UCLA sounds more and more appealing every single day, the way you put that. I might have to do that. I'm going to have to go check it out.
No, it's a beautiful campus.
Well, see, it's near the ocean, but I don't know if Barnes cares about that because he coached at Clemson and Austin, and he wasn't exactly near both of them. But maybe in his older age, he's dying for that ocean breeze.
And you get plenty of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the temperature.
I don't want Rick Barnes to leave, man, because it ruins my 5-year SEC rise to dominance plan. He was part of that.
So, and he may not leave. I mean, you know, I don't know.
He may parlay this.
At this point, I don't know how appealing the Pac-12 would be.
I don't know either. That's the whole thing, man. The SEC is really kicking it. I mean, it really is doing good.
You know, and I mean, I was kind of bummed when I saw the Eric Musselman news. I kind of liked him at Nevada. I thought,
I did too.
Maybe you're going to build Nevada up to something of prominence.
Yeah,
but you know, obviously that didn't happen, and him going to Arkansas, I was like, okay, well now you got another really great coach. You're going to an SEC school. You know, your whole theory about the SEC just slowly building something.
Yep.
I mean, the only thing that is flawed in your theory right now is that it may not be slowly building anymore.
Yeah, that's true. It might be rapidly building. That's true.
You know. Obviously, Eric Musselman was limited on how he was able to recruit because it's Nevada. You know, I mean, who wants to go to
right.
Reno?
And, yeah, but I mean, it's really remarkable. I mean, the conference right now, oh, God, who just got the job? Buzz Williams just got the job
Buzz
at Texas A&M.
A&M.
So Buzz Williams is at A&M. Frank Martin is at South Carolina, right? I already mentioned Kermit Davis is at Ole Miss. Ben Howland is at Mississippi State. You've got Eric Musselman is now at Arkansas. John Calipari is still at Kentucky. Rick Barnes is still at Tennessee for now.
He'll probably stay.
Jerry Stackhouse just got hired at Vanderbilt. Mike White is still a very, very good coach. Had his team in the Elite Eight a few years ago down in Florida. Louisiana still doesn't have a head coach. Who knows who they'll hire? If they open up the piggy bank, they'll be able to draw in a really big name. right? These are the SEC is pulling in some serious coaching talent.
And who's Alabama?
Nate Oates.
Nate Oates.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a really
from Buffalo, who had the team in the tournament and a six seed, no less. So it's been pretty remarkable that the kind of run that they've had in terms of landing coaches. And a lot of it is because, and my theory was based on the idea that this was going to be the SEC using its money to say, you know what, we want to be a power basketball conference. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to start opening up the pocketbooks to hire these guys. We're going to bring them in. We're going to get better facilities. We're going to use the football money to do that. We're going to use the football power to start forcing the basketball programs to get in line. And as a conference, we're going to do this and really raise up the profile. It's not going to be overnight, but it's going to take a while. And it's going to take a while, but it might be sooner than later that the SEC all of a sudden becomes near where the ACC is in college basketball, or at least where the Big Ten is in college basketball.
And that, and you, in a way, you almost want that. I mean, the only problem is that, you know, obviously the West Coast gets kind of left behind. But, I mean, to have those schools right there in that region, that's really good. I mean, it's going to produce really good basketball.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. I hope Rick Barnes stays.
For the West Coast.
But let me tell you something. I know. If I hope Rick Barnes stays, but if he leaves, I get it. I completely understand.
Oh, you're chasing history at that moment. I mean,
you're right.
It's a better lifestyle, I mean, obviously, yeah, you know, what you pay for in Tennessee is going to be vastly different than what you pay for in Los Angeles. But that's the history. It's the one of the more iconic schools in college basketball history.
Yeah.
You're going to walk into the Pauley Pavilion and you're just going to see wooden everywhere, which also could be very intimidating, very daunting task that no one else has really been able to live up to.
Yeah, I love it. All right, we'll see where that goes. All right, final thoughts on the NCAA basketball championship tonight between Texas Tech and Virginia, plus a little bit of Masters Week preview coming up next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. All right, so let's put our money where our mouth is. I think Virginia is going to win. I think Virginia wins by 4.
All right.
So I'm gonna hold on to that.
I'm going to trust in the family gene pool.
All right, go with Texas Tech.
Yeah, we have great athletes in our family.
You totally do.
There's Jared Culver, my other cousin, Rodney Culver.
Rodney Culver, yeah.
And I'm sure there's a more.
I thought there was a Culver race car driver, but I'm not.
Probably. We're all over the place, Tony.
That's right. I wanted to bring this up because it's Masters Week at Augusta National and fans will be watching practice rounds. First of all, I have a tradition every single year. I sign up for the Masters ticket lottery, and then I wait for the email that tells me I didn't get them. So it's every year I've gone through this process.
It's a tradition like none other.
It's a tradition like none other. I wait for the email that comes in. I can just peg it right now. Thank you for signing up for ticket. Unfortunately, your name was not chosen. It happens every single year, and I don't ever expect it to actually land. The moment it lands, I wouldn't even know what to do. Like what the Joker says in Batman, I wouldn't even know what to do if I caught it. Like, I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be like, oh, my God, I got to buy tickets now. Oh, my gosh, I actually have to do this. But Darren Rovell tweeted the prices for the concessions at the Masters. Egg salad sandwich is $1.50. Pimento cheese sandwich is $1.50. Barbecue sandwiches is good. It's just really good. $3. Grilled chicken wrap sandwich is $3. Classic chicken sandwich is $3. Turkey and cheese on wheat is $2.50. A soft drink is $2. Bottled water is $2. The beer is $4. Chips are $1.50. Peanuts are $1.50. Cookie is $1.50. And that's the prices you pay to Augusta.
Talk about price gouging.
It's
my
amazing.
Lord.
I know. They're just
slash your prices, Masters.
My God. Bring it on.
$1.50 for a sandwich.
It's amazing.
Who do they think they are?
Who do they think they are is right.
I love the fact that they've been able to keep that price down.
Darren Rovell pointed that even with inflation, the prices are cheaper than they were 20 years ago. Like the sandwich was $1, but with inflation, here's his tweet. Factoring for inflation, many Masters concession prices are cheaper than they were 20 years ago. The pimento cheese sandwich in 1999 was $1. $1.57 in today's dollars. It's $1.50 today. That's pretty good. Pretty good. And it's apparently a I don't like.
Do you think sometimes he just makes numbers up?
I think so too. Sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, where
this baseball card went for $375 million or something like that.
I mean, how do you go from like, you know, in 1999, which, you know, say was that 20 years ago, it was a dollar, and then due to inflation, it's $1.57.
Like, how does he figure? Is there an inflation calculator?
Yeah, gotta be, right?
Yeah, do you go online and figure that out? Is there probably is there an app that's easy to do? I don't know.
It just seems like a weird number.
It is. It is. I remember thinking when Jordan Spieth won the Masters a couple of years ago, he was like 20, I think it was 20, 21. You get to play in that tournament for life as a champion. And, you know, most of the guys don't play when they're old, but you get to go every year. So if he lives to be 80, he will, for the next 60 years, he gets every April, he gets to go to Augusta National and wear his jacket and be treated like a piece of royalty.
Yeah.
Forever.
And then what? Like, I mean, like Jack Nicklaus, all they do now is they compete in the par three contest, right?
Yeah, they just show up at the par three and then they walk around with their jackets on as past champions and, you know, revel in the fact that they were once champions.
Shake hands,
pretty awesome.
Kiss babies.
So does Danny Willett and people you've never even heard of that have won this thing. Masters Week. It's SB Nation AM.